And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Kent Osborne. We gathered experts to talk tech today and answer questions you might have. We're in the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls. We'll have Matt Guru, Joel Brovelite shortly on with us. Right now, Exigent Solutions Security Officer Amos Asap is here. Hey, Amos.
Hey, how you doing?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Good, good.
Good. Also from the Bureau and Peer, we have Jeff Litterick on the line. Good day, Jeff.
Good day, all.
You might want to remind folks that you can call, text, tweet, or email your questions, or simply swing by our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio, and post your comment or question there. Don't be shy. Our phone number, 800-524-3604, at KentSDPB is the Twitter handle, and of course our email address, midday, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday, at sdpb.org. Well, the first thing I noticed, Amos, when you walked in, besides that's a snappy-looking shirt you got on,
hey, thanks,
is that you're not toting your Note 7 anymore.
I'm not.
Did you chicken out?
Well, I don't know if you call it chickening out. It was, you know, when they announced that they were going to start regulating and requiring that your phone be shut off and not charged when you fly in an airplane, I could only assume that that was going to get worse as it went forward,
yeah.
Maybe not allowing it on planes at all. And I've got a flight to take next week. So in order to avoid not having a phone when I am out of town, I said, all right, I'll take my phone in and get it exchanged.
You did the prudent thing.
I did.
You did.
Otherwise, you know, if I didn't have that, if that reason, I probably would have kept it. I probably would have, you know, continued to use it as in a safe manner, not charging overnight, charging where I can see it, not running it up to 100%. As I think a lot of people have done, and will probably be okay until they get exchanged with the new Note 7.
Right. So there's the Consumer Protection Safety Commission noted like 92 incidences of problems. So that's, as we noted on the last program, that's a really low number.
And I don't have enough fingers to figure that one out, but based on 2.1 million phones out there, that's a pretty low percentage. So,
right.
You know, the chances are, but then again, I guess if you don't have to take the chance, why do it? I guess I take that chance every day when I drive to work, though, too, right?
Okay, so you took it back. You got an Edge 7.
I took it back. In my case, my carrier, their policy was that, yeah, you could bring it back, no restocking fee, and then basically your option was to buy another phone, any phone you wanted, and they'd apply the price that you'd paid for the Note 7 towards that phone. You'd get a refund if it was less, or you'd have to pay the difference if it was more. And then that phone also will not have a restocking fee if you choose to come back and get your Note 7 again. So that's my plan. And then just this morning, I received a message from Samsung that said that those phones should be in the hands of retailers mid-next week. So, you know, there's a good chance that I'll have that Note 7 back by our next show and even by next weekend, really.
You're going to go back?
Oh, absolutely.
What? No. Just a couple of your top reasons why you wouldn't just stay with the Edge.
Oh, well, you know, don't get me wrong. This is a great phone. I've actually been surprised at how much I like it. It's smooth. It's fast. It's good at what it does.
Mm-hmm.
But the Note 7, I had gotten used to using the pen that comes with it, the stylus that pops out. There's a lot of extra features there. I really like and have missed on this one the iris scan as far as recognize you and getting into your system. In fact, I keep finding myself holding this one up to my eyes, expecting it to do that.
And nothing happens.
A little faster processor, a little more RAM, just a little better phone on that particular machine. So I'll probably... Plus, I bought all the accessories for my first one. I have no accessories for this one. No cover, no screen protector, no anything. So, and I'm not going to invest in those. I'll just get that Note back and use all my accessories that I previously purchased.
Sure. Size not a reason why? I mean, you mentioned the extra battery,
negligible.
What's that?
The screen size,
yeah,
is negligible. I mean, I did put them next to each other because I did the Samsung deal where it takes all your information from one phone and puts it in the other. I forget their specific marketing term for it. But the size is not a reason to change, no.
All right. Well, we'll let that issue lie for now. And boy, you know, if you're interested in science, if you're a kind of a nerd in the science realm, read the articles on why those batteries did what they did. It is, and the theory, I guess, behind it, which is if they recharged so fast, there was a layer of crystals that formed. Is that, am I, yep. I'm going to paraphrase this, yep. You tell me if I'm wrong, but a layer of crystals kind of formed on the battery, and those crystals perforated the
divider
seal, right. You know, so it keeps the thing apart and it shorted out, and that caused the fire.
Yep.
And it, part of my mind says, that's a beautiful thing. I mean, I imagine these crystals growing in this battery, but doing this horrific thing. So anyway, the science behind it's kind of neat. If you're into that, we'll let you read that online. But
you know, that's one of the theories. There's another theory that you know, batteries and phones are basically very large sandwiches, or very small sandwiches, I guess, depending on which way you're going with it, of lots of different components. And as they tried to squeeze batteries into a smaller and smaller size, that they physically could have actually squeezed these batteries too much, which caused perforations between the dividers, between the positive and negative side.
Okay.
Which again causes a short circuit and heat and the subsequent fire slash, I hate using the term explosion, but you know, the catastrophic failure of the phone, I guess.
Yeah. So they did push a patch that didn't let the batteries charge more than 60%, I guess, was one of them.
I don't know if that's out yet. I don't have mine anymore, so I got no firsthand experience on that. But yes, there was an over the air update that was going to go out to keep the phone from charging over 60%, which is supposed to be well within the barrier of what caused the phone to cause those crystals to appear and then cause the rupture.
And the other solution that was suggested was to charge your phone in a more slow manner, which would be like setting it on one of those charging pads.
Which is also more like of a trickle pulling charge. Your fingernails out now that you've had fast charge, because to go back to slow charge is just, you know, these are the 3,600 milliamp hour batteries, and you can charge these in, you know, a little over an hour. Mm-hmm. And you put it on the slow charge, and you know, now you're talking 3 or 4 hours, which, sure, if you're charging it overnight, no big deal. But when you're in a hurry or you've got 10% left and it's sitting on your desk and you need something to get you through, say, midday on South Dakota Public Radio,
yeah,
it's really nice to plug it in for 20 minutes, get enough juice to get you through 4, 5, 6, 7 hours.
Yeah, I more envisioned those little charging pads, which are cool, by the way.
Yes.
As you chuck your phone on that at the end of the night, and you know, you don't have to hook any wires up. It just set it on there. It starts charging. I've actually got an accessory in my car, a car mount, that I set it in there, and it starts charging.
I've been told that the new GM vehicles actually have that embedded in the armrest in the center console. So, like, if you buy a new Suburban or a Tahoe, and this is not an advertisement for it, I've just heard this, but you buy a new one of those, you simply set it in the armrest, and it's got a QI charger built in.
Is that QI, is that sort of agnostic to, I mean, well, it's been announced that Apple is going to maybe start doing some wireless charging. Would it be the QI as well, you think, Joel?
Well, the Apple Watch already essentially charges without having to plug it in. You just place it on the magnetic connector and it charges through contact, which is basically the exact same thing.
Okay.
It's just a little, see, there's true wireless charging, which we're not talking about right now, which you can charge from a distance, whether that's a foot or 10 feet or even further if you focus it. And that charging is available, but that's not what we're talking about. We're talking more like contact charging.
Setting your phone on something, right?
Yeah, and that's what the Apple Watch has built in, but it also has a magnet that kind of sucks it to that, so it lines it up exactly, so it can have a smaller contact surface, and so you don't have to plug the watch in, which would be super annoying. So, I mean, Apple's already, it's not that they're going to do it, they already have the technology. For some reason, they just haven't decided to build it into their mobile devices other than the watch yet. So, I mean, I expect that they'll do it at some point. There's clearly something holding them up, and it's not likely that they just don't think it's a good idea because they've already built it into a device. This must be a price thing or something that they don't like about it.
It a quick Google of it does say that the rumor, of course, it's a rumor, is that they are not going with the QI standard, and that they're going with something more of what Joel was talking about, where they can charge devices from up to 15 feet away using a transmitter and receiver. I guess it'll be interesting to be seen, but it would be nice if there were a universal standard, but those don't seem to.
Well, Apple likes universal standards as long as they're the creator of
it's
the
their
standard.
Right. Yeah. Well, even the Note 7 now has moved on to USB-C, mm-hmm. Which is frustrating because I had gone through and switched out all my chargers from USB, micro USB to USB-C, and then when I had to go get this one, I had to go and switch them all back, which I know, if that's the worst thing in the world, that's first world problem, but
right, exactly.
Yeah, it would be nice.
You mean
if
you
they
didn't
the
have
same.
An old one already?
I mean, oh, I did. I had them all. Oh, okay. I just put them in. I had already stored them away.
Oh, so you're really mad that you just had to go get the box again?
Right.
Yeah, I understand how that goes.
So, how's the no headphone jack thing working out for people? Has that died down now?
I would think so. This is a new iPhone.
Oh,
if anybody wanted to see it, anybody in
no
the room?
No headphone jack.
They made in the room.
I decided to go back to the smaller one. Not because any other reason than, you know, last time, if you were tuned in last time when I got it was the iPhone 6, 6 Plus, I decided I wanted the larger one, and then I stayed with that for the 6S Plus. And I've always said I wanted to go back to the smaller size, so I'm trying it out this time, and who knows, I'll switch with it. But
why? To interrupt you.
I just really like this size, you know, it's such a...
Fit in your pocket better, or
virtually
your
any
wallet.
Pocket.
You've got a kind of a wallet that
I carry a wallet that I made actually that carries my cards and cash and receipts and is actually sized for an iPhone 6 Plus, and I really like that because I don't then have to have a case and I can drop the phone all I want and it's still very safe and actually this new iteration with Apple's new wireless the EarPods. This is going to be even better because I use right now an LG wireless headset that I made virtually all of my phone calls on, and it's Bluetooth, and it's just this thing that hangs around my neck. It's kind of doofus looking, but I really like that because I never actually take my phone out of the case unless I actually want to look something up. I want to actually type. That plus the watch has been really nice for me. But I've always liked this size, the iPhone 6 size. I actually like the iPhone 5 size as well, the smaller size. I like them a bit smaller because I have an iPad, so if I really want a bigger screen, I've got lots of options there. The bigger screen's nice. I guess we'll have to see, in a month or two, I might want to. I think really the only reason I'd go up to the 6 or the 7 Plus is that dual camera is really, really interests me. If you don't know anything about that, Apple... on the higher end model, the larger model has two cameras, allowing them to get a actual optical zoom rather than just all digital, as well as giving the option of focusing the foreground in the case of, say, a portrait and then blurring the background using two cameras to do that through software. So lots of neat options that are kind of only available with this configuration.
So you're sort of electronically introducing depth of field.
Not
to photographers.
With the camera, it's actually optical zoom. But yeah, you're right. Honestly, most cameras that have a depth of field are doing that through software anyway, because they have one lens, maybe with multiple focus points. But their software is faster and better anyway, so your high-end SLRs are really doing that anyway, because as we've talked about, for several years now, software. Is really the new hardware. You have to have hardware to implement that, but the software is so much better than having to rely on specific hardware when you can do that through the flip of a switch.
What
software?
What has been
we
the
kind
reaction,
of went off the rails there on that? Sorry about
what,
that.
What has been the reaction of people to the software update, the iOS 10?
There was a little talk, and actually I experienced this myself. It was probably the first time it's ever happened. As soon as it was available, the minute it was available, I happened to be eating lunch, which was fantastic, and I was at my house. So, I ran around and hit update on, 1,000 different devices in my house. And surprisingly, they were all downloading. I didn't have any problems with that. And one of my devices, my iPad Pro, kind of crashed.
Huh.
It bricked, which has happened, a very small percentage, but a bunch of people out there. And honestly, I just ran the update again. I restored it and ran it up. I didn't lose any software. I didn't lose any data because, of course, I had it backed up to the cloud. So there was really no issue for me. But there were a few hiccups, I would say, out there. But, as long as you've done your due diligence and backed up before you did it, which it specifically tells you to do, it wasn't a big problem, maybe kind of a slight delay for some people. But I really like the update. There's so many great features in the iOS 10 that I really, really like.
Can you name a couple of them?
I like the voicemail transcription, which, of course, if you're using Android, is something you've probably been able to have for a while. And actually, I was able to use it when I used Google Voice before they discontinued that. But basically, instead of listening to your voicemail, you can get kind of a preview of it when you tap on the voicemail. And because it's kind of within the Apple ecosystem, it's very, very tucked in there. It's not like a separate app you have to go to or, download it. So I've really, really liked that. I don't think I've actually listened to a voicemail since I got iOS 10. I was actually running the beta of iOS 10 for, I think a month and a half, 2 months now. So I've just kind of been updating along with it. I like that. One of the biggest things with it, and we talked about this when they announced it, one of the biggest features was kind of a complete revamp of the messaging app.
Mm-hmm.
And now there's all sorts of little toys, little stickers. There's even an iMessage app store, so you can buy stickers or you can download them for free. And they have all these effects and word bubbles and just this crazy stuff in there, which my 9-year-old daughter thinks is the best thing ever. And it seems like a very frivolous update, but Apple released information saying that most of the time spent on the phone is in messaging. It's not on calling, and
right.
It's not on emailing. It's messaging. And there were lots of third-party apps out there that would allow you to add these things in, so Apple's just like, well, we're just going to tuck all that in. So I really like those features, kind of the communication features. And I haven't been able to confirm this, but both my wife and I noticed that the sound quality, and I don't know if this is true, but we both separately noticed it, the sound quality from the microphone was actually better on the new. So again, that must be software. It must have been kind of a software. And this was before I got the new phone. So, but I've been Googling it for, 3 or 4 days, and I haven't found any reference to that. If anybody out there knows about this, and I don't, please let us know, send us a message. But I think there are a lot of under the hood things. There's a ton of updates, but I thought it was one of the better updates.
Yeah, we've actually got a couple of emails that we need to get through, but we need to take a quick break before we do that. So we are gonna step away for just a moment. When we come back, we've got some emails, some questions about should I update or upgrade or not, or I guess it's an update, not an upgrade, and then a couple of problems that looks like they've cropped up. So we will take those questions on right after this quick break. Well, welcome back to Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today, answer questions that you have. We have Joel Brovelite on the line from Peer. We have Amos Asa.
Joel's right here.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Jeff, that's okay.
Jeff Litterick in Peer.
He can Joel be Brovelite. From here, and I'll be from Peer.
I think I've had too much of this really good coffee from USF, I think. It's probably got me really wound up today, but talking about cell phones. We had a question from Facebook, Amos. Don't get too relaxed over there.
Yep, sorry.
Ask away.
Sue asks, she has a question. She updated her iPad to iOS 10 today, and she asks, how can I get it to default with my home screen rather than the cascade of suggestions I am not interested in? And I don't have any experience with iOS 10, so I don't even know what she's talking about.
Well,
here.
If you've used any iOS, the functionality, I shouldn't say any, but any of the last two or three versions, the functionality is virtually the exact same. So first I'd have to ask what home screen means. I'm not sure what that even means and what your default home screen might mean.
Well, don't you have when you're looking at the screen, the ability to move a couple screens over, and one of them would be considered your home screen by pushing.
Yeah,
on the,
I don't know if I, you button. Could press the home button, and that takes you to the kind of the first screen, first page of apps. If you just updated your iOS and you had data on there before, there's no reason that would change at all, unless you kind of restored it completely. So let's say that is what she's talking about. It might put new apps on there. There's a new home app that is probably not used by you, but maybe. And it may have repositioned some of the built-in Apple apps or removed one or added one. I doubt that's throwing you off too much. However, if there are new apps on there that you don't like, new in iOS 10, you can now delete any app you want. Even if it's one of the Apple built-in ones, it's been a long-requested feature for users. So now you can delete anything you want in the same manner you would delete any other app. I can't imagine that's what she's talking about, because it doesn't give you options. Mostly it just kind of puts any new apps, which I think there's only two, on that main screen. If you don't like them, you can delete them. Let's assume that's what it is, and if so, you just kind of do a long press on it, and it'll wiggle, and you can press the little X, and it'll go away. Hopefully, that's what you're talking about.
Shoot us a screenshot and post it, and we'll see what you're looking at. If you're looking at notifications or the home screen or whatever, I just hit the update button on my iPad, so we'll know by the end of the show.
No, you won't.
Really?
Well, maybe. I guess it's possible.
There's about 10 minutes remaining. We'll see. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's 10 minutes, and then it's the update, and then it's the restart. It's a good hour at least.
So you are suggesting, though, you're recommending that everybody. Oh, it's bug free, and is this going to be?
You know, I can't say that it's super bug free. I mean, this is my two caveats. You should back it up first. Absolutely, back it up. However it is you're going to back it up to the computer, or back it up to the cloud, whatever it is you do, back it up just in case, so you don't lose anything. And second thing is, if there is a specific app that you use for that, it's a must use, that's not made by Apple, or is in your workflow, you want to check that first to make sure that your workflow isn't going to be messed up, whether that's photo editing or a business app or some specific thing. You want to check, make sure that works with iOS 10, and then, yeah, definitely go for it. These iOS updates have been very safe, I think, even with the very small chance that people are what we call bricking out there, as long as you've backed up. Again, I had a personal experience with it, and I think it only delayed me about half an hour. So I would definitely update.
There's three questions in two here. I'm just going to read this, and we'll take it apart piece by piece. Lori from Sioux Falls. I have two iPhones in the house, a 5C and a 6. Lately, I have been experiencing trouble. The 5C drops out of Facebook app and Messenger and won't log back on. Does that sound familiar?
So Facebook app and the Facebook Messenger app.
Yep.
Drops out of those and won't log on. Yeah. This is the 5C?
The 5C, yeah.
She said?
I'm going to get onto the 6 here in a second.
You know, that probably doesn't have much to do with the phone at all. That's probably the Facebook app. If it was me, I would probably just go ahead and delete. Is that two apps? I don't use...
Yeah, it is now,
okay.
Yes.
I would delete both apps. And just reinstall them and, you know, re-log in. That probably will take care of it. Another possibility is you could just reboot the phone. Just hold the power button down, let it shut off, turn it back on. Sometimes that will fix it if it's kind of like a little memory leak with that app. It definitely sounds like a Facebook's app's problem, not the phone's problem in itself. So I'm not trying to push that off on Facebook, but if it's localized to two Facebook apps, it seems pretty logical that that's what it is.
Okay. The iPhone 6 occasionally goes dark, and when it comes back on again, and then comes back on again, the screen cuts in and out randomly. Wondering what's causing the problems there.
That's a hardware issue.
Sound like touch disease to you?
No.
Oh.
It wouldn't go dark. Touch disease, which... I don't really like that term, but that's what it
is. I know you don't, because you said that last show.
It's not a disease. You can't spread it. You can't infect somebody with it. It doesn't come from somewhere. It's just a hardware issue. This does sound like a hardware issue. The only way to really tell, though, is to go ahead and just restore it. Just back your data up again, same thing, and restore it. And that's really easy to do. You can Google on how to do that, or you can just kind of walk yourself through it. It's in the general down at the bottom, reset. Mm-hmm. You can do that. If it still does it after that, it's likely a hardware issue. It could be as simple as, replacing the screen or the LED, which you probably don't want to do at this point because it's probably just better to buy a new phone than spend the couple $100 that it would cost to do that. If it's under warranty, definitely take it to an Apple store or call Apple. Those would be your two best bets. But that sounds way more like a hardware issue, and I'd probably get it taken care of sooner rather than later.
Okay. Her MacBook Pro has a service battery notification. Came out about a couple weeks ago. Do I need to worry about this? I keep it plugged in most of the time.
That's probably why you have a service battery notification. I have the same issue myself. Let's assume it's probably a 3-, 4-, 5-year-old MacBook Pro, and it likely has a built-in battery, which every Apple has for maybe going on 10 years or so. It's only a problem if it's a problem for you. Eventually, if it goes so dead that it can't even recognize that it has one there, that could be an issue. Wouldn't be any bigger issue than you having a very portable desktop computer, meaning you can unplug it, but as soon as you do, it'll go dead. It probably doesn't do that now, but it's just telling you that battery is toast and it needs a new battery. You can take that in to a repair place and they can replace it with an aftermarket one. If it's not an Apple store or if it's just an Apple specialist, or you could look it up online and maybe do it yourself or have somebody real tech savvy do it. Mm-hmm. Or you can take it to Apple or call Apple and they will replace it. Batteries are something, especially on laptops that are even the built-in ones, are not that big a deal to replace. So I'd definitely look into doing it. And they're, I can't say because I don't know the exact model, but it's probably under $100. Maybe slightly over $100 to get a new battery. However, if, as she mentioned, if it's not an issue, it's not going to be an issue until it goes so dead it's not recognized. And even then, that may not be an issue for you.
I got to say, one of the better things that I like about this MacBook is the freedom to go out on battery. And I've got an extreme amount of time to get things done. I can leave the house and know that I'm not going to run out of battery. I mean, it's just a freedom thing for me. I can set up and do work or do whatever, wherever, and I don't have to find a plug-in for this thing. It's so freeing.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's kind of what you always want in a portable computer, is it being super portable. You know, what I'll say about that is, I totally understand what you're saying. The reason that's the case, there's two reasons. The main reason is they went from non-removable batteries to built-in batteries, which allowed them to put something like 40% more battery in, because now they don't have to worry about all of the extra junk you have to put in a device in order to make the battery removable. And then there's all sorts of trouble with that. So that's the main reason. Now all the computers that Apple has and all the devices have non-removable batteries. A lot of people think that's a downside. That's an upside, and you just pointed out one of the big reasons. The other reason is, of course, Apple makes both the software and the hardware so they can really optimize it.
Well, this fits perfectly with Kathleen writes in, and she's talking about the issue with the battery and the Note 7. She says, if the fire problem is the battery, why replace the phone? Why not just swap out the battery? And we sort of touched on that last show. It's not a user... serviceable battery.
Yeah,
and even
exactly like the
and,
Apple
and even if the guy or the gal at the cell phone store cracked that case open to replace that battery, you're going to lose that seal, that waterproof
right
seal.
I have
so
no
important.
Doubt that that's what Samsung itself is doing. They're taking all of these phones back and they're probably just
absolutely
taking them apart and putting them back together.
These would be sent out as refurbs. If you have a new Note 7 and you turn it in for warranty purposes, you will get a refurbed device,
absolutely,
which is a device that's been sent back for some reason. And now they've got 2.1 million of those laying around for that particular
expecting
purpose.
Expecting about a year or so a fire sale.
But,
No, they can't name it
yeah,
that.
Yeah, can't call it
sorry,
that.
Sorry. Pun not intended.
You know, the biggest reason that they didn't do that originally was that they weren't 100% sure that it was actually the problem was actually contained within the battery itself, and that it wasn't part of the charging mechanism or some other component related to the battery. It took them a while to actually pinpoint what the issue was, because that seems obvious, right?
Yeah,
you
just
swap the battery.
Well, and you know, I think you're 100% right on all that, but I think in addition, well, first off, they're being forced to recall them now. I mean, they were doing so before, but now the U.S. government's saying, hey, no, take them all back. But I think for optics alone, the perception is that it's so dangerous, even though we've pointed out it's such a small fraction, mm-hmm. but everybody out there thinks it's so dangerous. Nobody's going to trust that you're going to fix their phone. Like, you hand them your phone, and even if they conceivably could do this locally or send it in and send it back, nobody's going to trust that. You know, they're going to just to make nice with all of their users, which they absolutely want to do, they're going to have to do it right and get you a new device. And that's exactly what I think they're going to do. And it's just smarter from a marketing standpoint.
Yeah.
So one last iPhone question.
We never even mentioned it. New iPhones and iPhone 7 and 7 Plus are now hitting the shelves, although the 7 Plus hitting the shelves is not exactly true from what I've read and people I've talked to. But new iPhones today, if you don't already have one, and new Apple Watches.
I read that that everybody's going gaga with this camera. And the new camera and the phone, and what they're not talking about is some of the back end kind of software stuff that's being updated. And in fact, they're saying that the Apple Pay is really the big story, transitioning over into web, browser sales and things, making it available.
Yeah, on the web. Yeah,
yeah.
So you can use Apple Pay.
Yeah,
yeah.
Just from a financial, perspective of carrying that transaction, then the encryption and everything over to a web purchase is huge.
Well, and it's not that dissimilar to what Amazon does. Amazon has the Amazon Pay that even if you're not buying from Amazon, if you're buying from another vendor, they can have what's called Amazon Pay, and it kind of routes it through Amazon. So all of your data and information, it's just as easy as them saving your data, but you really only have one repository for that, and it's more secure than, say, the mom and pop place that sells, wood carving tools. You don't have to rely on their, web interface, and whether your data is secure, it's with a larger company that has kind of a bigger footprint, and maybe you might trust a little more than somebody who just added an app to their website. So, and it's not dissimilar to that, in that, now you'll see pay with Apple Pay. I think the only difference is, and you highlighted it, is kind of the ultra secure security that Apple Pay has, generating a new number every time for each purchase, which is very secure. So each individual purchase.
I mean, don't get me wrong, that is exciting to me, but I think
it's
the
pretty
new camera's
boring.
Probably a little bit more exciting.
I don't know if that's the biggest deal on the update, even under the hood. I don't know that that's the biggest deal, but it is a big deal. Probably bigger for Apple is that now they're going to have Apple Pay in Japan, which they were kind of completely locked out of and is a very big market for them. So that's probably, as far as Apple's concerned, what we're doing.
So get people's fancy tickled a little bit is the Apple Series 2 watch and then the watch OS 3.
I know I didn't get my new watch yet. So,
but even the Android Wear people, it seems like the next iteration of smartwatches is coming, and they're actually getting
good.
I wasn't going to use the word getting good,
yeah,
but
no, I know
they're getting
to
the point where people are liking them enough, and I think they've with adding GPS in, and things like that. They're hitting on that sports market that kind of was clinging to the first versions.
Right.
That health.
That doesn't allow you to use the watch as in the new version of the Apple Watch, Apple Watch 2. Doesn't allow you to use it as a phone, and like you can leave your phone at home. We're not to that point yet. But it does allow you to leave the phone and be able to know where the device is using cellular. That's great for runners and things like that. And it does give you a better connection as far as that goes. So, we didn't talk about it, but the Apple Watch OS 3, which if you own any Apple Watch, is available. Highly recommend that. They kind of revamped all sorts of things about it. You almost are going to have to relearn it, but you will like everything that they've done. They've kind of memory protected a bunch of apps. So whatever apps you use normally are kind of automatically always loaded so that there's no lag time when you open them up, which was kind of an issue for some apps. So just lots of great things about watchOS 3. I would definitely recommend that for anybody.
Okay. Well, and again, if you've, I guess, been thinking about getting something to wear.
Speaking of wearing, I stopped at a Verizon this morning to see how the iPhone sales were going and what they got in, just because I was curious.
Yeah.
And the guy I was talking to had not one, but two smartwatches on. It was the craziest thing I've ever seen. He had you're doing the face palm
Amos's
thing
face
right
palming
now.
Over there.
I asked him about it. I said, "Whoa, dude, two watches?" He's like, "Well, this one's my Fitbit, and on it, it's of course the Fitbit watch, which has a watch face on it.
Right.
And then this one is my what's the Android one? The Moto, not Gear, Android Gear.
Gear 2, yeah.
This is my Gear 2. So this one I can make phone calls on and affords, and this one track. I'm like, don't they do the same thing?
And they were actually on different wrists.
Different wrists. It was awesome.
Duct taped them together somehow.
Awesome. He was my new hero.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk a little bit about municipal Wi-Fi and the differences between what part of the globe you're on and how that's being accepted. Also, of course, your texts, emails, questions, Facebook posts. Facebook.com/techradio is where you can post your comment and questions. Don't be shy. Our phone number is 800-524-3604. @KentSDPB is my Twitter handle. And the email address, of course, is midday@sdpb.org. More on municipal Wi-Fi after this quick break. And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the computer guys. We've gathered the experts today to talk tech and answer questions that you have. Amos is here, and Joel and Jeff, of course, are here to take your questions. The next program, if you're already looking forward to that, October 7th, put that in your planner. And the 21st would normally be our day, but it's election coverage that day. And you got to be ready for that, don't you? I think so. Have you sworn off Facebook because of election stuff on there yet?
Not because of election stuff, just for the Facebook portion. Yeah, anybody who knows me knows that if you're trying to get a hold of me, don't try Facebook because you won't.
It's getting kind of thick in there.
I wouldn't know.
I've got to say, I was wondering if Amos had watched the NFL last night on Twitter. Did you happen to catch any of that, Joel, or Jeff?
We talking football?
Yeah, mm-hmm. We're talking football.
I don't watch football.
All right, well,
sorry. I think it's really exciting though that Twitter's broadcasting
10 games this season.
Why is that exciting? That doesn't seem like anything technologically advanced.
It's
to me
not.
At all.
No, it's just that a mobile company is spending the money to broadcast it. I mean, that is not a network. You know, I mean, I like that idea that. It's just a widening of competition, you know, whether that's the Olympics or the Super Bowl or sports or whatever it is. I like that these other companies are getting in broadcasting because, you know, let's face it, you know, my daughter isn't going to know what CBS even is. She just knows the shows that she likes. So this is just another movement towards that where we get to choose what we want to watch, how we want to watch.
Was that the only venue that you could see that game on the internet last night?
I don't believe so.
I think the only way you could see it is if you had a terrestrial provider like, what channel was it on? CBS? NBCBS, whatever it is. If you have their app or if you have, you know, like Dish or DirecTV and they have an app, you could watch it online that way. But I believe that Twitter has the exclusive rights for broadcast, internet broadcast only. So like if you didn't already have a provider that has it on a terrestrial source, then that's the only way to do it. I'm quite certain of that.
I guess what I thought was neat was that they actually took that experience that a lot of us already do, which is second screening. So we're watching something and we're maybe tweeting about it or having a conversation in real time with other viewers, and they sort of smacked those two things together.
But you can't second screen when your second screen is the first screen. How do you second screen? Now you have to have two devices going.
Well, you are. I mean, I'm technically you're
second
screen.
I'm just kidding. So. I did think of that, though. And like, how do you keep track on your phone of your fantasy football when your phone is what you're watching it on? And then you got to flip between that, and then how's the
you got a third screen?
Not if you've got an you got Android, a third you screen. You can run two applications at the right same time.
Well, no, you can do that, but then you got to. It's such a small thing. You're like, who is that again?
Right.
Yeah. No, I.
We're
I get it.
Clearly out of our realm here, and we're going to need some help from the. We're going to have to. And have to ask the audience for what they thought.
Yes, please
so,
do.
So please shoot me a tweet at KentSTPB.
Jeff, did you watch it?
No, but my two cents is Twitter is still looking for a way to actually make money. And, you know, this kind of offering might be their solution because up to this point they've been pretty miserable at actually producing money. So great service. It's just they've never found a way to monetize it. And I have a feeling you're going to see more of this if this works out because this may be a way for them to monetize. And the NFL being the draw it is, you know, a big one to kind of start off with. But we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, we gave John T. the day off, and that this would have been, right in his
Boy.
Wheelhouse. But
yeah,
so we'll have to ask the experts out there in the audience. And
I
have
must
them.
Not understand, because Yahoo is saying that this is a marquee event moment for sure and will be one of those I-remember-when moments. I just don't
Not
see
according
it.
To the people
no,
here.
No.
But, I mean, I do think it is a marquee. I mean,
it's watching TV.
I don't know
over
if we're going to remember when. I think it's going to be like, what was it? And Google it and figure out when. But I do think it's important because it's kind of the first, I've already mentioned that. So I do think it's an important thing. But we'd like to know if anybody actually watched it.
It is kind of interesting because it's, I don't know how many of you have heard of the service called Twitch. Twitch is basically a streaming type, and they actually, a lot of companies do conventions and presentations and actually play stuff now. And it has the chat and it has all that stuff kind of built in already. Plus, you can follow stuff. The NFL and it's bigger in scope, but still, it wasn't anything nobody else can already do already. So I guess I don't see it as a marquee because I've already been doing this for three plus years on different things on Twitch, different sporting events and stuff. So that's my take. Twitter's being bigger and stuff, but we'll see how it goes. But I'm not overall impressed at this point. So,
okay. Well, the final topic of the day is something that interested me, and I think it might interest other folks. And I'm just going to go around the room here and ask the question about municipal Wi-Fi. There's 20 states in the U.S. that prohibit municipalities from throwing up a wireless signal to their citizens. And this week, U.S. Representative from California proposed legislation to allow cities and towns to build their own internet services, even in those states that have laws restricting them. So it's the Community Broadband Act of 2016. Of course, you have to have a fancy name to go with it. But let's start with Jeff. Is community broadband a good idea?
You know, like anything, it kind of depends on the circumstances of the city and the location and stuff. It's been very successful in quite a few places. It's been marginally successful in other places. A lot has to do with, you know, who services the town already. Is there already good competition or not? Where they work best is when there's little to no competition, especially in the pricing, and the incumbents, so to speak, do not want to build stuff out. When you get places like Google Fiber has gone in and has three or four different ISP customers, kind of like Sioux Falls, where you can basically you have about six to choose from, it's the prices make it so competitive that it's not always the best interest of the taxpayer for that. So it's one of those things there's a need for, and I see it. Any kind of infrastructure rollout like that is a big investment, but it does benefit the entire town quite a bit. So a lot of it kind of depends on your location and the laws. And, yes, there has been a lot of pressure by incumbents in many states to pass laws banning municipals. And, in fact, a judge ruled in North Carolina against somebody where one of the municipalities would actually have to turn off their service because of said law. So there was a court case that was just decided, and they just voted yesterday to actually turn that service off because they lost the court case. So
yeah, North Carolina and Tennessee both.
Yep. So I see it as valuable, but it kind of depends on the location and the town itself. So.
And here's an interesting comparison. The European Commission, real recently, like this week, has promised free Wi-Fi in every town, village, and city in the European Union in the next 4 years. So, a completely different approach.
But a completely different environment, too. I love when people compare the United States to Europe, especially living in South Dakota. There's no place in Europe that is as sparsely populated as South Dakota is. When you get over there, you are in a much more medium suburban urban environment in most of those countries, every place you go except the very, very remote areas and the tourist type additions. So in many ways, Europe is, and especially the UK, is more advanced than us, but they have less rural population and less sparsity and mountains and in some cases stuff to get through too in certain areas. So I can see that very happening very easily, especially in the major countries of the European Union. We'll see how Poland and some of the other ones do that are more rural, but it's one of those things, like I said with Melissaville, a lot of it depends on location and what your status is and population densities.
It's an interesting read. If people are interested in it, I would go to the internet and look at a few things. There's some other things in there. We talked about 5G in the U.S. a couple of programs ago, and they're envisioning fully deploying 5G in the European Union, which is the fifth generation of mobile communications by 2025. They make reference to a few other things in there, and then a copyright law package is in there. It's been formally unveiled. It allows publishers to charge aggregators for publishing snippets of their stories. So I'm not sure how all that would work, especially in the U.S., reining some of those feeds back in.
European Union, especially France, has been the foreleader on a lot of the copyright stuff and a lot of other stuff. And there's actually a lot of laws in France that would be very draconian to the United States, considering our First Amendment privileges and stuff in terms of that. It is a kind of a different environment. But for data privacy, for individual rights, for that kind of stuff, on copyright and all that stuff, the European Union has always been leading for quite a few years now. And it will be interesting because a lot of companies do business in Europe. Google was just fined millions and millions of dollars by the European Union for breaking some of their copyright / privacy laws and stuff. And the French courts have ruled against them many times in searches. They ban all searches of Nazi-type objects, and it's illegal. So it is a different environment, some good, some bad. But a lot of the U.S. companies are forced into that model because they want to do business in the European Union.
Well, thank you, Jeff. Again, you'll have to take that further reading online after the show today. That is all the time we have. I want to thank our panelists.